Book 3. The Wilderness. Chapter 1. They stayed 5 days in Pretoria, just long enough to buy the wagons and commission them. And when they left on the morning of the 6th day, they went north on the Hunter's Road. The wagons moved in column, urged on by the Zulus and 12 new servants that Shaun had hired. They were followed by a mixed bag of black and white urchins and stray dogs. Men called good luck after them, and women waved from the verandas of the houses which lined the road. Then the town was behind them, and they were out into the veldt, with only 12 of the more adventurous mongrels still following them. They made 15 miles the 1st day, and when they camped that night beside the ford of a small stream, Shaun's back and legs ached from his 1st full day in the saddle in over 5 years. They drank a little brandy and ate steaks grilled over wood embers. Then they let the fire die and sat and looked at the night. The sky was a curtain, at which a barrel of grape-shot had been fired, riddling it with the holes through which the stars shone. The voices of the servants made a hive murmur as a background to the wailing of a jackal in the darkness beyond the firelight. They went to their living wagon early, and for Shaun the feel of rough blankets instead of silk sheets and the hardness of a straw mattress were not sufficient to keep him long from sleep. From an early start the following morning, they put another 20 miles behind them before outspan that night, and 20 more the next day. The push and urgent drive were habits Shaun had acquired on the Rand, when every minute was vital and the loss of a day was a disaster. They were habits that stuck, and he pushed the caravan northward as impatiently as he would have chivied the men on the Candy Deep who were cutting a drive to intersect the reef. Then, one morning, when they were inspanning the oxen at the usual hour of dawn, Ember Janey asked him, "Do we go to meet someone in Kosi?" "No. Why do you ask?" "When a man moves fast, there is usually a reason. I was seeking the reason for our haste." "The reason is..." Shaun stopped. He looked around him quickly as if to find it. Then he cleared his throat and scratched the side of his nose. "Outspan an hour before high sun," he finished abruptly and went to his horse. He and Duff rode out 1 or 2 miles ahead of the wagons that day. But instead of keeping to the track, or hurrying back to chase up the caravan, Shaun suggested, "Let's ride across to that kopje over there. We'll leave the horses at the bottom and climb up to the top." "What for?" asked Duff. "For the hell of it! Come on!" They hobbled the horses and set off up the steep side of the kopje, picking their way over the tumbled boulders and through the tangle of tree trunks. They were sweating and blowing hard when they came out on the summit and found a place with shade and a flat rock ledge on which to sit. Shaun gave Duff a cheroot and they smoked and looked out across the land that was spread like a map below them. Here the grasslands of the high veld were starting to blend into the forests and hilly country of the bush veld. There were fleece, open as wheat fields, ending suddenly against a hill, or bounded by haphazard plantations of tall trees. From the height at which they sat, they could trace the courses of underground rivers by the dark green and superior height of the trees that grew above them. Everything else was the colour of Africa, brown, 1,000 different shades of brown. pale brown grass on red brown soil, with twisted chocolate brown tree trunks reaching up to the moving masses of brown leaves at their tips. Flickering indefinite brown were the herds of springbok that fed amongst the trees and on the slopes of the bare, bulging brown hills. And the brown land reached away vast and unhurried into immeasurable distance, unmarred by the scratchings of man, tranquil and dignified in its immensity. Makes me feel small, but sort of safe, as though no one will notice me here, said Duff, then laughed self-consciously. I know what you mean, Sean answered him. He saw that for the first time since they had left the Rand, the strain was gone from Duff's face. They smiled at each other and leaned back against the rock face behind them. They watched their wagons, far below them, coil into the tight circle of the laager, and the cattle turn free, move out to graze. The sun sank, and the shadows stretched out longer and longer across the land. At last they went down the hill and found their horses. That night they stayed later than usual, next to the fire, and though they talked little, there was the old feeling between them again. They had discovered a new reef that was rich with the precious elements of space and time. Out here there was more of those two treasures than a man could use in a dozen lifetimes. Space to move, to ride or to fire a rifle. Space spread with sunlight and wind, grass and trees, but not filled with them. There was also time. This was where time began. It was a quiet river, moving but not changed by movement. Draw on it as much as you would, and still it was always full. It was measured by the seasons, but not restricted by them. For the summer that was now standing back to let autumn pass was the same summer that had flamed 1,000 years before, and would flame again 1,000 years hence. In the presence of so much space and time, all striving was futile. From then on, their lives took their tempo from the leisurely turning of wagon wheels. Sean's eyes, which had been pointing straight ahead along the line of travel, now turned aside to look about him. Each day he and Duff would leave the wagons and wander out into the bush. Sometimes they would spend the day panning for gold in the sands of a stream. Another day they would search for the first signs of elephant. But mostly they just rode and talked, or lay hidden and watched the herds of game that daily became more numerous. They killed just enough to feed themselves, their servants, and the pack of dogs that had followed them when they left Pretoria. They passed the little Boer settlement at Petersburg, and then the Outspanberg, climbed up over the horizon, its sheer sides dark with rainforest and high rock cliffs. Here, under the mountains, they spent a week at Louis Trichardt, the most northerly permanent habitation of white men. In the town they spoke with men who had hunted to the north of the mountains, across the Limpopo. These were taciturn, brown-faced Boers, with tobacco-stained beards, big men with the peace of the bush in their eyes. In their courteous, unhurried speech, Sean sensed a fierce, possessive love of the animals that they hunted, and the land through which they moved so freely. They were a different breed from the Natal Afrikaners, and those he had met on the Witwatersrand, and he conceived the respect for them that would grow stronger in the years ahead, when he would have to fight them. There was no way through the mountains, they told him, but wagons could pass around them. The Western Passage skirted the edge of the Kalahari Desert, and this was bad country, where the wagon wheels sank into the sandy soil, and the marches between water became successively longer. To the east there was good, rich forest land, well-watered and stocked with game. Low country, hotter the nearer one went to the coast, but the true bush veldt where a man could find elephant. So Shaun and Duff turned east, and, holding the mountains always in sight at their left hand, they went down into the wilderness.